This is Chapter 4 of Turn Down the Lights, Turn Down the Bed, written by Rockin' Hamburger, read by KLB. There is a rapid increase in time spent together outside of work, and a slow shift of their sexual relationship to the domestic sphere. Ted begins to come over after work, and their evenings blend together in a marathon of food, sex, and talk. They work around Ted's FaceTime calls with Henry and Freya's weeks with Trent. The anticipation of free time together is part of the picture. They share covert, charged looks at work instead of indulging. They send texts and talk on the phone after Freya's in bed. Trent has never been one to freely express his emotions, partly from his upbringing and partly from the well-instilled cultural understanding that you keep those close to the chest. Being around Ted is rather like being submerged in a bath of them. Ted sometimes talks around a subject before he gets to it, and he appears to ask about the topics he himself seems to want to explore, although Trent isn't sure how self-aware Ted is about either tendency. Trent notices it one weekend when Ted asks about the impact of the divorce on Freya. "Well, she's young enough that she doesn't really remember a time when we were together, so it hasn't been a hugely difficult adjustment for her." And on another phone call, when Ted asks how they arrived at their custody arrangement, "We talked it over with a child psychologist." The more revealing conversations often happen in the cover of Trent's dark bedroom or over the phone, where the inability to make eye contact seems to encourage openness and curb self-consciousness and the pressure to be reserved. Trent is more revealing than he has been in all of his other relationships besides Andrew, and opening up to him took comparatively longer, months, if not years. Trent suspects he simply has a more keen understanding of himself at 42. Examining his issues, receiving therapy, and being married has forced him to be a more open and reflective person, which is something for which he's unspeakably grateful. One night, on a late-night call once Freya's asleep, Trent talks about his failed marriage. It's the first time in a while that Trent has told the story from beginning to end, from the whirlwind romance to moving in together and having to establish a living routine that worked for them, to their wedding, and the complicated, drawn-out process of applying to adopt, and the 3 long years of waiting for Freya, during which time they were seeing a couples therapist regularly and arguing constantly. There was so much pressure to make it work, especially after Freya was born. We had spent so much time imagining our family together. Neither one of us wanted to admit it wasn't working, not when we finally had our child. He describes their struggles to connect, the transformation of their marriage into something more akin to roommates. He shares that it was Andrew who pointed out that Freya was the one thing keeping them together, that every other reason had been slowly chipped away. For all that Ted likes to talk, he also makes for a great listener, asking thought-provoking questions. "That's so hard. After all that work to find Freya, were you on the same page?" Trent closes his eyes to consider this question. "Part of me knew he was right, but I still felt blindsided when he asked for the divorce. We separated for a few months, but that was a technicality. He didn't want to be married to me anymore, and nothing was going to change that." "Do you miss him?" Ted asks quietly. "Sometimes," Trent admits. "But I think what I miss the most is our friendship. He was my best friend during a crucial time in my life. I think back to the person I was when I met Andrew, and I barely recognize him. wearing this cold armor all the time to hide deep insecurity, so closed off. I was a mess, but he was too. We processed a lot of our early pain and struggle together. No one has really known me the way he does. Trent plays with an errant thread on his comforter. Once we separated, I could see more clearly that the love wasn't there. But sharing a child with him meant we'd still be deeply entwined in each other's lives, which was partly why I held on, tried to convince him we could make it work. Trent heaves a heavy sigh. But logic isn't at the heart of a marriage, or it shouldn't be. And you can't keep someone in a marriage if they're not happy. Ted exhales a long breath. Whew, ain't that it? I couldn't keep asking Michelle to try and make herself happy with me when doing that was making her miserable. Bonnie Raitt said it best, you can't make someone love you if they don't. Trent hums in accordance. Great song. And very true. Trent hesitates, debating whether to share, and deciding it is good to talk about this. My parents divorced when I was 11, and they constantly used me as a weapon to hurt each other. When things fell apart with Andrew, I was terrified I'd somehow repeat those same patterns. I never, ever want Freya to feel like I did. But I've realized that just because my marriage fell apart like theirs doesn't mean I'm going to make the same choices they did. Trent, you're saying all kinds of truth tonight, Ted murmurs with a distinct note of resigned sadness. A lot of the things I need to hear and internalize. Oh? Trent asks, an invitation to share. Ted changes the subject, moving on to a discussion of additional excellent power love ballads by talented female singers, and Trent follows his lead. If Ted is going to share his deeper struggles, it won't be because Trent insists on it. After dinner one evening, Ted asks how Trent worked out his sexuality from the soft, sidelong position of Trent's sofa. When did you know? Ted asks, eyes ahead. Trent examines Ted's hunched posture and the struggle to make eye contact, and he feels his heart pang with empathy for him. I knew for sure when I was 9, Trent says quietly. But looking back, I had the sense I was different as soon as I started school. Ted looks up, his shoulders bearing the brunt of his sudden bodily tension. Different how? Trent answers him with a question. Do you find that others tend to notice the ways you stick out before you yourself do? Ted clears his throat. Yeah, he whispers. Trent has years of self-reflection to give here, and so he does. He talks about what it was like to grow up in the post-Thatcher 90s under Section 28, which erased any representation in school curriculum, made it illegal to even discuss the topic of gay people in schools, and perfectly legal to fire a teacher who might decide to. He talks about living in the shadow of a deeply political and personal health epidemic that disproportionately affected his community, and the fear and stigma driven by news media, all of which contributed to a difficult, ongoing journey through denial, anguish, and internalized shame toward self-acceptance. It's a journey I'm still on today, Trent tells him. It never really goes away. Not entirely. That's how pervasive and damaging homophobia is. Growing up where I did, in the time I did, Ted shares, eyes wet. I don't think I ever let myself consider the possibility. Pushed it way down, convince myself those thoughts and feelings didn't mean nothing. Ted looks over, eyes filled with heartbreaking loss. I can see it, now that I'm looking for it. Trent reaches across the small distance between them to slide his hand inside Ted's. He can only imagine how it must feel to come to that understanding much later in life. Trent smiles with compassion. You're here now, and that is something to celebrate, Trent declares, gently steering Ted to the integral place of pride. Ted links their fingers together and smiles with gratitude. One Saturday morning, they eat breakfast at the kitchen counter. Ted is in a quieter mood than usual, his foot tapping on the leg of his bar stool. Trent tells a few stories from his years as a reporter to fill in the odd silence, and when he realizes that he is perhaps trying to coax Ted out of his mood instead of allowing him to talk about it, Trent stops and lets the silence in. It only takes a few minutes, although they feel quite a bit longer, for Ted to release a sigh, a frustrated one. Sorry, I'm all in my head, Ted murmurs, making a pointing gesture at his temple with an exasperated air. Nothing to be sorry about, Trent replies, taken aback. If Ted feels that might not be allowed, well, it's very sad, is all. He waits. Ted folds his arms over each other on the counter and says, It would have been my dad's 65th birthday today. Trent restrains his surprise and sadness, or any response besides placing his hand on top of Ted's, encouraging whatever Ted might be willing or able to share. Trent reflexively holds back on any attempt to insert himself into the moment, allowing Ted space. Ted sighs. I was just thinking about this thing he'd say. A birthday is a gift. Every day is a gift. Ted exhales a wet, forlorn laugh and uses his other hand, the one that's not holding Trent's with a death grip, to wipe at his eyes. Hey now, Ted says with false cheer, and his body language shifts alarmingly to would-be placid composure. Tell me another one of your stories about being a pain in the butt for football coaches everywhere. Trent shakes his head and moves in, cupping Ted's face to kiss him with gentle comfort. You don't have to do that, Ted. Shove the sadness down. He kisses him again, and Ted clings to him with a shaky rush of breath. You can just feel things. That's so. Ted scrapes his stool back in his haste to get to his feet. There are a few things I want to feel right now. He takes Trent back to bed, and Trent follows his lead. When Ted's ready to talk about the difficult memories, Trent will be there. When Ted broaches the subject of his mental health, it has been 8 weeks since Ted showed up in his office with his unconventional and consequential offer. Ted opens up in the quiet darkness of Trent's bedroom, Trent's head on Ted's chest and Ted's fingers in his hair. I didn't even know what it was at first, Ted murmurs. I guess you have this idea of what a panic attack might feel like, from TV and movies, you know? But it's something different. Can't breathe, blurry vision, hearing's all wrong. It don't feel like your body at all. Trent ignores his guilt over having been the one to expose Ted's panic attack to the public, trying his best to focus on Ted instead of thinking about himself. The divorce really did a number on me, Ted continues. sifting through Trent's hair with repetitive movements. I felt like I was giving up on my family. That's why I was having panic attacks. Ted's hands pause in their tracing patterns. No. That's not the whole story, Ted says. Trent feels Ted's chest heave under his cheek. My dad shot himself when I was 16. Trent releases his horror-stricken shock with an inhale that Ted will have felt with Trent laying on him, and he curses himself, worried it will make Ted retreat. He tightens his hold around Ted's waist through the sting of tears in his eyes. I came home and, Ted grits out, and I heard the gunshot, and then I found him. Ted's hands close into fists around strands of Trent's hair, and Trent strokes his hand along Ted's chest, face wet from the sudden cavernous sense of the pain and trauma Ted carries with him. Trent listens to Ted's heartbeat as Ted talks. I don't think I'll ever understand why he did that to us. Therapy's helping. I'm learning it wasn't exactly a decision he made. That whatever pain and hopelessness came on, it just took over. But it still feels like he quit on us. Didn't care how would it affect me. Ted makes a sound of incalculable grief. 5 minutes. I wish I'd come home even 5 minutes earlier. Trent gathers him in his arms while Ted sniffles and whispers to him in the dark, "It wasn't your fault." When Ted's breathing has steadied and his trembling has subsided, Trent is seized by the need to say, "Thank you for telling me." Ted rolls them over and kisses Trent deeply, fervently. "Thank you for hearing me. I've only told a few people." Ted exhales shakily. It doesn't get any easier to say, but it feels like less of a shameful secret every time. "Ted," Trent murmurs, stroking his hands through Ted's hair. "I am so sorry. What a difficult weight to carry. You are so resilient." Ted freezes, and then he kisses Trent again, gasping for breath between the parting of their mouths. "Trent," he sighs. "Trent." They kiss and hold each other until they nod off together. Trent comes to consciousness in the early light of morning, to Ted pressing him into the mattress with a heated kiss. "Color?" he asks, voice a whisper. "Green," Trent gasps, and Ted devours Trent's mouth, beginning to stroke over Trent's hole. Trent trembles in the light peeking through the curtains, raking his nails over Ted's back and whimpering as Ted travels down the length of Trent's body to press his mouth over the path his fingers traced. Ted licks over him, spears his tongue inside. Trent shivers and cries out from the juxtaposed sensation of slick, slow wetness and coarse, rough bristle over his most intimate place. And when he comes, the words are on the tip of his tongue, that he loves Ted desperately. After, Trent listens to Ted's deep, even breathing as he sleeps some more. And all Trent feels is fear. He has become firmly entangled with a man who is a miraculous human being in every conceivable way. A man who will leave one day. Of that, Trent is certain. But it's too late. The damage is well and truly done. Richmond loses the match against Arsenal 2-1, and Ted asks Trent to come over. He's never been to Ted's flat, but he doesn't get a chance to poke around because Ted goes straight to the kitchen and slumps into one of the chairs with a heavy sigh. Trent sits across from him and waits. Ted tips his head back and closes his eyes. "I know I said it's not about the wins and losses." "But that was a tough one," Trent agrees. Ted sighs in agreement. "It's hard to see him work so hard only for it not to pay off." Trent examines Ted's posture carefully, the slumped shoulders and exhaustion on his face. "Ted is on nearly all the time, so it has been jarring to see the difference in him when the switch is off. Getting to know Ted on a level he never imagined has been a lesson in not making assumptions. He feels honored when Ted shares this side of himself." Ted looks faintly taken aback when he lifts his head to find Trent watching him. "Uh-oh. Do I got something on my face?" Trent shakes his head. "No, I'm just taking you in, as you are. I'm glad you're letting me see it." Ted frowns, so Trent clarifies, "The man you are out there, that's you too. But I don't think I've had the chance to see this side of you very often. I appreciate that you're letting me." Ted appears to think about it. "What, letting you see how tired I am?" Trent inclines his head. "If that's how you're feeling." Ted gives a weary sigh and shuts his eyes once more. "Yeah, it is." Eventually, he opens one to look at Trent with a smirk. "And maybe a little horny." Trent laughs, then gets up to round the table and push Ted's chair back to get on his knees for him. Trent encourages Ted to fuck his mouth, but Ted keeps stopping to check in because, well, because of course he does. When Ted asks, "Color?" for the third time in a minute, Trent pulls off. "How about if I need you to slow down, I'll tap your knee, and if I need you to stop, I'll double tap?" "I like that," Ted says, nodding and smiling. "Real clever brain you got there. I appreciate you, really." "Ted, fuck my..." Ted proceeds to fuck his mouth. Trent has been so singularly focused on the two constants in his life right now, Freya and Ted, that he has hardly noticed anything else. When he isn't with one of them, he is carrying out his PR work for Richmond and trying his best not to get carried away with imagining an impossible future for him and Ted. When he has spare moments in his day to consider it, the situation is bleak. They each have a child and an ex-spouse in the picture, and Ted's son is back in America, where Ted will eventually return. All of the problems he identified with Tess early on are still present. Still very good reasons to have a conversation about the need to put a stop to this before Trent gets too accustomed to having Ted in his bed and home and life. Trent also feels incredibly guilty for keeping the truth from the people with whom he is closest. He owes Tess and Andrew that, at least. But he cannot bring himself to admit how far he has fallen from reason. What is the point of revealing what is sure to be a short-lived burning flame, which Ted will look back on with affection or possibly regret, and which Trent will look back on with sorrow? The situation comes to a head one Saturday morning when Ted takes his daily FaceTime call with Henry in Trent's guest room. Trent can't hear Ted's words, but the sound of his warm tones floating down the hallway are pleasant and deeply, undeniably intimate. It makes sense. Ted stayed over, and a lazy day of sex and reading is planned. He understands why Ted wouldn't go back to his flat just for his call, but it makes every challenge of what they are doing crystallize in front of Trent. The notion that Ted has begun to incorporate his time with Henry into their time together has vast implications. The boundaries they drew up in the beginning weren't designed for a dating relationship. Not allowing their arrangement to encroach on time with their children made sense before, but what they're doing now has different, dizzying dimensions. When Ted joins Trent in the living room, where Trent has been silently panicking, he sits down on the sofa with a fond sigh. "Henry learned about gears in school this week," Ted says, smiling lovingly. "Couldn't stop talking about pulley systems and the research he did this weekend on the biggest pulleys in the world." Ted tilts his head on the sofa toward Trent, shaking his head wonderingly. "So damn smart. Gets that from his mom." Trent's previous revelations collide with several freshly inspired feelings of care for Ted. His adoration for his son and his tendency to downplay himself. Trent is filled with the desire to tie Ted down and make him see what an absolutely phenomenal person he is. Everything combines and hits Trent somewhere in the vicinity of his solar plexus. Trent says, "Ted, we need to talk." Now, there's a sentence that doesn't tend to have a happy ending, Ted says, looking so incredibly nervous it only adds to Trent's terror. "What's happening here with us?" Trent whispers. "Ted, I can't keep going on like I'm not absolutely terrified of how entangled we're becoming. It seems like you're here on borrowed time, and this is starting to feel serious for me." Ted sits up properly, expression rippled with concern. "Whoa, hey, it's serious for me, too. Haven't I been showing you that?" Trent bites his lip. "I've had my suspicions, but it seemed too good to be true." Ted takes Trent's hand on the sofa between them and tangles their fingers together. "Hey, likewise. You think I'm not terrified? Trent, I wasn't expecting this. Move to a whole new country, married, trying my best to fix it. Fast forward and here I am, divorced and dating a man." Ted squeezes his hand. "Dating you, and real happy about it, by the by." Trent returns the tight pressure, heart thumping wildly. Ted huffs out an anxious breath. So, this is the part where I'm really hoping you feel the same way. Trent snaps out of it, can't help but laugh softly. "Of course I do. I've known how I feel about you since our second dinner together." Ted seems to be thinking back, and then he leans in to kiss Trent, a lovely, chaste thing. Ted's brows furrow in thought. "For me, I think it was that first night I came over." Trent flops a bit on the sofa. "Oh, God! The night I cried?" "Yeah," Ted sighs, smiling. "You know, I think I cooked up that whole agreement as a way of asking you out. Then you didn't even realize we were dating." "I don't think you can blame me for that," Trent says fondly. "I thought it was just, well, just sex, since that is technically what we agreed to. I was in denial until you stayed the night the first time. It clicked for me that morning when we... Trent glances over, the memory of it making him rather breathless. Ted blushes. Oh, I remember. Trent sighs, light and airy, in love. He kisses Ted to express the feeling, and Trent gets caught up in the press of their mouths, the sweep of Ted's tongue and the hum of pleasure Ted lets out. He nearly forgets that there are still several complicating factors on the docket, and when he remembers, he pulls away. Wait. We should talk about the logistical problems of this. Ted opens his eyes. His mouth is red, which is distracting, but he hums and leans his head on his hand, propped up on an elbow nestled in the back of the sofa. Logistical problems? That don't sound too fun, but I'm listening. Let's go down the list. Trent feels like he's back in the press room suddenly, ticking off points. To start, you're the head coach of a football club in the Premier League, which is, let's face it, not that progressive. If this gets out, no one will be talking about anything else for some time. Ted rolls his eyes. I got a taste of that in May, Trent. It wasn't a walk in the park, but... No. Trent shakes his head. Ted, you did coach a sport in America, didn't you? You can't possibly think that the media frenzy will be anything like it was for the news about your panic attack. It will be 10 times louder and more hateful. Believe me, I've been in the belly of the beast. I was the beast. Every time the team loses a match, it will come up. They will say terrible things, and it will follow you. This won't be a blip on the radar. The news will travel back across the pond if you decide you want to coach American football again. Trent releases a breath. He's been speaking more quickly as it all spills out. Dating a man? That will be on your permanent record, if you will. Ted has been watching Trent the entire time he's been talking, and now he says, "My turn?" Trent nods once, shocked by Ted's calm, almost steely demeanor. Trent, I know I might seem naive sometimes, but maybe you could keep in mind I'm not a walk-in stereotype, and I know what the world is like. Trent resists the urge to squirm as Ted stares him down. I know it's going to be a 3-ring circus. I ain't stupid. Trent has never heard Ted sound so frustrated, borderline angry. I apologize, Trent says, and he means it. I was being condescending and rude. He swallows thickly. But I don't want you to ruin your life for... just for... ruin my life? Ted repeats in apparent disbelief. Hey now, did we or did we not just establish we're both serious about this? Trent digs the heel of his hand into his forehead, tears prickling the corners of his eyes. We did. But I don't know that this is worth subjecting yourself to all of that. If it isn't necessary, he forces out, unable to look up while he says it. Ted knocks Trent's hand out of the way as he swoops in and kisses him. Trent exhales as Ted backs off just far enough to look Trent in the eye. He lays a hand on the back of Trent's neck. Will you let me decide if I think you're worth it? 'Cause I do, Trent Krim. I think you're worth it. So, you know, not saying we have to announce it to the world yet, but we can tell people when we're ready. Then if it gets out, I don't give a hoot, all right? Trent drags him in for a kiss that he trembles through, affection making him gasp through the frenetic press of their mouths. Trent shoves at the hem of Ted's shirt, which Ted pulls off next moment, and then Trent's shirt is off and tossed somewhere. Ted lays Trent across the sofa, making quick work of removing the rest of his clothes, then standing only long enough to strip down to nothing as well. He climbs back on top of Trent, and the weight of him is grounding and emotionally wrenching all at once. Trent's breath hitches as Ted strokes his hand down Trent's chest, his gaze searching Trent's face with aching understanding. Trent takes Ted's cock in his hand, stroking with shaky, urgent pulls. "I need," he gasps. "I know what you need," Ted murmurs along Trent's neck. He leans away for a moment. "Sorry, my pocket, I gotta..." Trent grabs him by the wrist and pulls him back from fetching the condom. "I don't want you to wear one," Trent confesses quietly. "I want to feel you, but only if you're okay with it." Ted cradles the back of Trent's head and kisses him in answer. "Course I'm okay with it," Ted murmurs, watching him soulfully. "I've got what I'm looking for right here." Trent nods, throat tight with emotion. "I only want you." "Good. I want to be enough for you." Ted tilts Trent's head back on the sofa cushion to drag the tip of his nose along Trent's jaw, and Trent shudders from the sensation and the words. Then Ted pulls away with a cheeky smile. "Still gotta get my pants, though. Got the lube in there." Trent laughs and watches Ted flop gracelessly over the side of the sofa to reach his khakis. He grins when he's back, then slicks up and pushes two fingers inside Trent without pretense, humming when Trent tries to press down. "I know you need it, don't you?" Trent says. "Yes, I want to feel you everywhere." Yeah, Ted nods, his hair beginning to break free of its styled hold and flopping over his face. He removes his fingers and lifts Trent higher, so that Trent has his back pressed against the armrest. Then Ted sits back on his heels and pulls Trent's hip forward, so his cock is resting at Trent's entrance. Ted strokes lube along the shaft and feeds an inch of himself inside, then 2 inches, then... Ted stops moving with a frenzied moan. "Oh, fuck," he grunts. "Wait, I gotta..." Trent holds on to Ted's shoulders as Ted moves so he's sitting on the sofa, pulling Trent's legs around his waist. He's panting, sweat forming on his brow. "Sorry, I... You feel way, way too good, and that was not a position I was going to be able to hold for long." Trent frames Ted's face to kiss him, then moves his hips to take Ted deeper, hissing through his teeth at the searing heat of Ted filling him up without the condom. "God, your cock," Trent gasps, just as Ted moans, "God, you feel like..." They share breathless laughter and more kisses. Trent sinks all the way down, wrenching gasps from both of them. Trent can feel the throbbing heat of Ted's dick. He can hardly take a breath in. Ted strokes Trent with the pace of his rocking, gentle thrusts, and it's not at all long before he's on the edge. He clenches around Ted inside him as he gasps, "Oh, just like that. You're perfect." Ted's jaw drops, and he yanks Trent down, fucking up, up, up with a shout as he comes inside Trent, collapsing against the back of the sofa with a punched-out gasp. Trent follows him, kissing Ted with heat and intensity, riding out his own orgasm. He comes over Ted's chest, panting and groaning, muscles clenching. Afterward, they shower, and then they eat leftovers from the fridge in Trent's bed because they can. They're naked, both of them leaning against the headboard. Ted tucks his empty container onto the bedside table and stretches along the length of the bed. Trent watches him appreciatively for a moment, memorizing the sight of Ted stretching on the sheets like a cat with a relaxed moan, happy and beautiful. Trent reaches around Ted to put his own container on the bedside table and climbs on top, straddling Ted's waist. "You are beautiful," Trent tells him. Ted stiffens under him, then blows out a heavy breath, looking at the ceiling over Trent's shoulder. Don't be silly now. Trent takes Ted's chin in one hand, looking. Ted swallows, and Trent tracks the movement of his Adam's apple before he returns to Ted's face. Ted looks distinctly uncomfortable. "You don't like being looked at," Trent hazards a safe guess. "Hey now, I appreciate someone appreciating me," Ted jokes, but it sounds extremely half-hearted. Trent leans down to kiss him, then back up again to continue his examination. "Yes, you seem quite comfortable letting me look at you." Ted laughs, but there's no humor in it. "Well, there ain't much to look at, that's all." Ted is still looking somewhere over Trent's shoulder. Hasn't made eye contact since Trent called him beautiful. Trent nods to himself, making up his mind. "You have no idea how I see you, do you? What a beautiful person I think you are." Ted exhales a shuddering breath, turning his face away, but Trent pulls him back again. Ted's eyes are clenched shut, face shuddered with emotion. "Ted, hey, give me a color." It's about 5 full seconds before Ted opens his eyes and says, all breath, "Green." Trent leans down to kiss him in comfort, stroking Ted's hair back from his face. When Ted finally meets his gaze, Trent meets it with compassion. "You're so beautiful, Ted." Ted bites his lip, shaking his head. "Trent, all I've said is that you're beautiful," Trent murmurs, reining in his aching sadness at Ted's discomfort without any complimentary phrasing whatsoever. "That's very difficult for you to hear, isn't it?" Ted's lip trembles. With tears in his eyes, he rasps out, "Because I'm not. There's this darkness inside me, Trent, and sometimes I feel like it's gonna spread and that's all I'll be." "I understand," Trent says, stroking his hands up Ted's chest, over his shoulders, and down his arms. "But there isn't enough darkness in the world to crowd out all the good you have within you." Ted's face twists in agony, his body tensing to fight off what Trent's saying. "You are a miraculous, deeply wonderful person, Ted. And I love you." Ted pulls Trent down for a kiss so passionate it becomes nothing but gasps of breath. Ted murmurs, voice low and deep, "I love you so much. I never imagined. Heart pounding, Trent closes his hand around Ted, shivering when Ted does the same for him. Then it's just their mouths and hands, working to make each other feel good and loved. In the morning, Ted asks Trent to fuck him. Trent takes extra care, doing what he wishes someone would have done for him when he was brand new to this. He opens Ted up with his fingers and his mouth, checking in and asking for Ted's color. When he presses smoothly inside, Ted is trembling and whimpering. I love this. I love you. Trent kisses him wherever he can reach, expressing every bit of love he has for Ted, wanting nothing more than to somehow push past the physical bounds of Ted's warm, gorgeous, yielding body to the essence within. After, Trent leans against the headboard with most of Ted's weight on him, Ted's arm thrown over Trent's waist and his head on Trent's chest. Trent runs his fingers through Ted's hair and breathes through the sense that this profoundly intimate moment exists somewhere outside the bounds of time and space. Ted's breathing slows and steadies, as if sleep is not far off. Trent could not love this man more if he tried, and that is abruptly the most terrifying thing he can imagine. God, what are they doing? Ted. Trent makes himself meet his gaze as Ted lifts his head. I need to ask about something, and I hope you'll forgive me. Trent hesitates as his heart tries to stay in this perfect, precious moment, then soldiers on. You did not move here with the intention to stay. You plan to return to America, don't you? For Henry's sake? Ted's expression shifts to one of acute, heart-wrenching guilt. Trent watches tears pool and run over, and the sight is so affecting, Trent cradles his face and kisses him. I know, Trent says, pressing his forehead tight to Ted's, positively weeping. It just don't seem fair, Ted whispers, distraught. Sometimes I feel like I'm Dorothy and I'm gonna wake up. And all of this, my life here, you, it'll all just be some wonderful dream I cooked up. Ted's breath hitches. But that's what has to happen, right? I can't stay here when half my heart is back there. Trent kisses him, but he has to stop when a sob forces its way out. If I could move there. But you can't, Ted whispers miserably. You got Freya. Trent nods, heart shattering. It's awful, brutally unfair. Ted pulls Trent on top of him and wraps his arms around him. Trent kisses him, but it's unsustainable with the intensity of his tears. He cries into Ted's throat. Ted strokes his hair, the sound of his sobs as painful as if they were Trent's own. They lay together, holding fast to each other and the moment. And when there is no other alternative, they leave the uncomplicated certainty of the bed and re-enter the world of logic and reason. There's nothing else for it. They both seem to understand, without saying anything more, that their relationship has reached its natural, inevitable end.